You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hey Bomb Squad, I'm your host Carrie Diamond and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. Each week we talk to the most interesting women in the world of food and bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life. First, thank you to today's sponsors for supporting Radio Cherry Bomb. Ancestry, with more than 350 regions and two times the geographic detail of other DNA tests, Ancestry can connect you to the culture, cuisines, and traditions of your heritage in a deeper way. Ancestry DNA is on sale for just $59 until August 20th. Learn more at ancestry.com/cherry. Le Cordon Bleu. If you're daydreaming about culinary school, it is time to say bonjour to Le Cordon Bleu. Learn more about the legendary culinary school's most prestigious professional qualification, Le Grand Diplôme, by visiting cordonbleu.edu. Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs. Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs are better than cage-free. They are bullshit free. Try for yourself. To get your coupon for Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs, head to vitalfarms.com/cherrybomb. Time for today's show. I love today's first guest so much. They're Melissa Hemsley and Anna Jones. Both women are part of the British Bomb Squad, and they are shaping how a new generation of Brits thinks about mealtime. Their focus? Eating beautiful seasonal food and cooking for yourself and your loved ones. On top of that, they've brought a real sense of positivity to the food world. Melissa, who you probably know as half of the sister duo Hemsley and Hemsley, recently published her first solo cookbook. It's called Eat Happy, which couldn't be a better title for a book from this sunny personality. And Anna Jones, who writes for The Guardian newspaper and worked for several years with Jamie Oliver, also has a new book out. It's called The Modern Cook's Year, and it contains more than 200 gorgeous recipes, and they're all vegetarian. If any of you out there need a boost of confidence, Anna previously had an office job, read an article about following your passion, and quit. So if you need some motivation, look no further than Anna Jones. We snuck in a quick interview when they were in New York earlier this year, and I grabbed them right before they left for the airport. Enjoy our chat right after this word from our friends at Le Cordon Bleu. Are you daydreaming about culinary school again? Make this the year your dreams become reality with Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Study classic French culinary techniques in cuisine and patisserie as part of their exclusive 9-month Le Grand Diplôme and graduate into a world of opportunity. You also can extend your course of studies to include culinary management and dedicated internships. Le Cordon Bleu has locations in more than 20 countries around the world and located within some of the best food cities out there: London, Ottawa, Madrid, Bangkok, Tokyo, and of course, the spiritual home of cuisine and Le Cordon Bleu, Paris. Turning your daydreams into reality is closer than ever. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more and let your culinary adventure begin. Melissa Hemsley, Anna Jones, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Oh, thank you. It's so good to be here.
Hello, Carrie. Hello, everyone. Cherry Bomb. Love ya.
Anna, you haven't been on Radio Cherry Bomb yet, right?
I haven't been on Radio Cherry Bomb, but I am an avid listener and a major fan. So, I mean, this is like a huge moment. It's a huge moment for you too, Mel, right?
Yeah. It's only my third time, but I get an old hand. Yeah, I can't sleep the night before every time.
But I'm so excited. I love you both so much. You know that. We have Anna Jones's cookbook right here, The Modern Cook's Year, over 250 vibrant vegetable recipes to see you through the seasons. So what number cookbook is this?
This is number 3.
Ooh.
Yeah, number 3.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I never thought I'd write one cookbook and I've got to three somehow.
And this weighs 400 pounds. So it's not like you just tossed off the third one and we're like, let me just throw a few things together.
It weighs an absolute ton. Yeah. I kind of think I'm a bit of a glutton punishment because my contract with my publishers was for 150 recipes and I just threw in an extra like 110. I mean, why not?
The value for money. The value for money.
Oh, the page I open right up to.
The cherries. Yeah. Yeah. I love that one. And but it's kind of, it's how I kind of cook through the year. It's kind of a year in my kitchen and the diary of kind of like how my style of cooking and also the ingredients change and my cravings change. So 150 recipes just kind of didn't cut it really, you know, because in spring you just, every season feels so generous and so exciting for me. I just kept on writing.
I opened up to the summer page and you have all those pretty words for vegetables like courgette. Mm-hmm. We say zucchini and you have aubergine, eggplant. And then you have something on here, I don't know, tayberry. What's a tayberry?
Tayberry is kind of a bit like...
How do you say it? Tayberry?
Tayberry, but I mean, whatever. You have a charming voice, Kerry, so everything sounds good in it. So tayberries are kind of like a bit like a blackberry, like if you... They're bigger, they're a little bit, they're sort of halfway between a raspberry and a blackberry, I guess. So they're a bit darker than a raspberry, they're longer, they're bigger, they're super, super delicious, and they have a very short season. And because they're, I guess, maybe a bit harder to grow, not many people grow them, so they're a real kind of prize delicacy when you get them. And places like Violet and, you know, the restaurants I love kind of do use them when they're in season, so yeah.
What do you do with them? Can you use them the same way?
Yeah, you could use them the same way you use a berry. So you could bake with them. You could make a pie with them. You know, they're so kind of rare and prized that I would probably just serve them kind of as they are with some cream or creme fraiche and, you know, maybe like a vanilla sugar or something like that. So, yeah.
What was that wonderful place you took me to again in London? Was it Arlene's?
Oh, no, Layla's.
Layla's
shop. Yeah, yes. Amazing. So me and Kerry had breakfast at Layla's shop, which is such a cute little restaurant and an amazing kind of shop next door. And
I still cannot get over the shop next door.
She has the most incredible produce. We're so lucky in the UK. And I think that's something that kind of, I realized so much when I was writing this book and talking about seasons was that, you know, if you look at America, you know, you kind of say this is US produce, but for us, we've got the UK, we've got kind of like all the way down into Europe, really, if you're kind of, you know, thinking about stuff that's close and local. So we have, you know, amazing stuff coming in from Italy. But yeah, being surrounded, just having, I think when you travel, I'm feeling that, aren't you, Mel, a bit at the moment, that having that connection with, you know, nature and freshness through food is even more important. Mm.
We got up early before Cherry Bomb and we whipped to the farmers market, Union Square.
Mm.
And
so
we had
much
a lovely
fun.
Time. It was such a nice place to feel at
tourists,
home.
Weren't we?
We were.
Melissa kept getting seduced by, basically, Melissa only wanted to buy food from like the old guys with really big beards because she like just wanted to like support them.
They have
was
such
so
a
sweet.
Twinkle, you know?
I can't help anytime I go to the Union Square Green Market, I'm just so loaded down with bags by the time I get home because you just can't help but buying.
Yeah. You make
so
a bet with yourself. You're like, I'll only spend this much, but then it's almost impossible.
Oh, I should probably just be like, here, you have $20. Figure it out on $20. And that way you don't come home with like enough produce for a family of 20.
Yeah. But they take cards now, which is really tough,
they
isn't
do.
It?
They so, do. Yeah. What are you obsessed with right now, Anna? Food wise, cooking wise?
I'm obsessed with, a huge amount of things. My obsession with lemons just continues. It seems to get stronger and stronger every second.
What are you doing with them?
I am a lot of roasting them at the moment. Obviously, it's kind of still pretty cold in the UK, hopefully warmer when we get back. So all my trays of roasted veggies have like lemons cut up in them. The brunch we cooked yesterday here in New York, we did a kind of turmeric coconut, whole roast cauliflower and potatoes, and then we threw loads of lemons in. So, yeah, I kind of continue to be absolutely obsessed with lemons. I've been like playing around with chocolate a bit at home, been trying to make chocolate with limited sort of success. I think it's one of those things that you require a very, very kind of like precise brain and also quite a lot of patience. Two things which are not my strengths.
Now, when you say make chocolate, walk us through that for a second.
Oh, yeah, just, well, so I've been trying to make a bit of raw chocolate. Basically, it all stemmed from my two-year-old becoming slightly obsessed with chocolate, kind of like in the run-up to Easter and then round Easter, there were all the eggs. And So he's got this now chocolate obsession. He calls it like Chocolulu for some reason. And so, yeah, I just wanted to try and make something that was a bit, you know, that I had control over, basically. So, yeah, I've been just using kind of like raw cacao and kind of, you know, making sort of raw chocolate myself at home. It's still definitely a work in progress, but I, you know, my favorite film growing up was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So I kind of feel like a kind of like modern day female Willy Wonka when I'm doing it at home. So,
You need to get that name, Chocolulu. You could be the organic natural Cadbury.
Yeah. That is such a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, let's do it. Well, my dad, actually, and lots of my brothers and my uncles and aunties, he's from Birmingham. They actually all worked in the Cadbury's factory, in the chocolate factory there in Bourneville. So, I mean, there's chocolate in my heritage. It's got to happen sometime.
Who knew?
Mm.
But who wouldn't want like a nice, healthy kind of take on the Cadbury egg, right?
Mm. Yeah,
or at least like good ingredient, you know, nicer ingredients.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also when we were growing up, you know that, I don't want to say the brand name, but you know when you could make those like iced chocolate drinks that we used to have when we were a kid? I would love a better few version than that.
Is iced chocolate the same as chocolate milk?
Yeah, chocolate milk.
Yeah.
Mm. I was never allowed that as a kid.
No, nor was I. Nor was I.
I was.
We grew up in the same sort of area. We have realized as well.
Yeah, we didn't know each other then.
But Surrey.
Yeah, next door to each other.
When did you two become friends?
I've been Anna's stalker for 7 years.
I knew you were going to say that.
Can you tell? Like I'm touching her now. I finally got what I wanted. I've been her fan for years, and then we have a few friends in common. So I sort of eked my way in carefully. It was like a long term plot, and now we're friends. And yeah, we've had a lovely time this weekend with Anna's sister as well, which has been gorgeous. And we've been cooking together, and I learned so much cooking from Anna, and she sort of played down how good that tray bake was. So it was,
tell
so
us about
good.
The tray bake.
Well, it looked glorious. So
you baked everything at once.
Yeah.
Okay.
She did. Well, how many trays did you need? Like 8 trays, and you sort of steamed, parboiled the collie.
Yeah.
And this coconut, turmeric, bright yellow.
It was sort of like a broth type thing that then we poured over the potatoes and the cauliflower and the mustard seeds and all sorts.
But then some of it got saved and poured into a jug, and I was dipping everything else into it, and it was delicious. And then the roasted lemons, delicious, divine.
Yeah. All right, we need recipes for all
of this. It was dreamy. Yeah, that one's in my book actually. But Mel made favorite thing of the day, which
stop
is her banana bread. We decided to top it with like a whipped salted date butter. And literally, we kind of like everything else we made loads of. The banana bread, we kind of made like 3 of. And then all the amazing women who were helping us in the kitchen, basically, we're all just kind of like fighting over the last crumbs of the banana bread. So,
Is
amazing.
It a new cookbook?
No, it's a riff on an old one, but the salted date butter we just sort of made up because we have a woman we love who has to come to the next one. She's called Selin, and she has I think her cookbook's called Oklava.
Okay, yeah.
And she has, I went to her first pop-up in London and had this medjool date salty butter. It was a starter, and she now sells that in Selfridges.
Oh, goosebumps. So good.
So we thought, okay, we'll make banana bread. How can we make it special? We have to make it special. And then we all kind of said at the same time, let's make this butter. So we just whipped it up. We'll give you the recipe.
All right. Yeah, I want your banana bread recipe.
When is it?
No, I want your banana bread recipe.
Oh, when?
Yes. Yes. I love banana bread. I just love making banana bread like everyone else in America. But I want special Melissa Hemsley banana bread.
Okay, you've got it.
All right, now it's your turn, babe, to talk. You have a cookbook out too.
Yeah.
And I am obsessed with the cover.
Do you like it?
You are so smiley and sunny on that cover. It just warms my heart every time I see it.
But I told you the story?
No.
I thought I was getting proposed to. I thought I'd got taken. So it's a picture off my Instagram that my publishers said, can we use it for the front cover? And I was like, are you trying to get out of paying for a photo shoot? Can we not do a proper photo shoot for my cover, please? And they were like, no, we love this picture. But it was taken 1.5 years ago in a place called Coba, about 1 hour from Tulum. And my boyfriend and I had been on holiday for about 10 days by this point. We were going home. For some reason, I thought he was going to propose to me. And I thought, it's now or never. And he took me to this great spot. And there's only 4 rooms. We weren't staying there. We went for lunch. We had a gin and tonic. There was this great basket of papayas and bananas. And he was like, I'll take a picture of you. And I thought, everything is like ticking the box for proposal. So everyone's like, you look really happy in the picture and very sort of knowing. And I'm like, I thought I knew that I was going to get frozen. Anyway, he hates me telling this story, but I have to explain it to you because it's funny. And that's, so I was happy in that moment. I'm still happy now, but I don't want to get married. I'm too busy.
But that's how you come across anyway. Like there's like, there is a kind of infectious, kind of like inclusive, kind of natural, like
relaxed
love to you, and that's what you exude wherever you are. So even though, you know, there's a funny twist,
but there is something about that photo. Do you have no makeup on in that photo?
Yeah, but yeah, I have got 10 days of tan. I'm on holiday.
Right, it's a great photo. So it's your first solo cookbook.
Yeah.
Tell us about the cookbook.
Let's do a proper photo shoot so I can, like, you know, really enjoy it. Yes, it's my first book. So I've been on with you with Jazz twice. And now I finally got Anna to myself. yes, it's my first book. It's called Eat Happy. And the subtitle is 30-Minute Feel-Good Food. And I wanted to make food. I wanted to make a book that everyone could enjoy, and you could be the most basic of cooks, and you didn't need to know how to do anything. So I tried to do a lot of stuff at the back, sort of kitchen saves, I call it. So what do you do when it's too soggy, too bland, too thin, too thick, too spicy? All the stuff that I had to figure out myself, because when I was growing up, Mum did all the cooking. Jazz did a little bit because she's the older sister. And I just laid the table. And, you know, I really didn't have to do anything. So when I left home at 18, and I used to come to Vegas all the time, and a shoe fair called Fanny in New York, which means something different in the UK. And I had no idea about food. And I was...
Wait, a shoe?
There's a shoe fair called Fanny.
Wait, were you like a shoe model? A foot model or something?
Oh, thank you for saying, but no. No, I looked after a brand called Vivo Barefoot, which is actually a very cool brand.
Vivo Barefoot.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was the brand manager at 18 because there was only three people in the whole company. So it was either be the CEO, the financial director, or the brand manager. So I opted for brand manager, and it meant I got flown to Vegas and New York, and I used to show off these shoes. Anyway, went back to London. I was thinking, God, I'm really eating in lovely restaurants, but I was traveling loads. And I was thinking, I have no energy and I feel rubbish. And I'm only 18, 19, 20. And 3 years in, I was going, I feel rubbish. Something needs to change. And I figured, what's changed? Too much traveling, eating at funny times, not enough mum food. And mum food is lots of broth, lots of soup. She's from the Philippines. So we ate always according to what was in the fridge. You never went shopping until you'd exhausted the whole of the fridge. And that meant tons of soups, because that's the easiest thing to throw things together. So I just started calling up mum, calling up Jazz, saying, how do I make stuff? So Eat Happy came from, I thought, what makes people not cook at home? And I thought time. So I tried to make it 30 minutes. Well, sorry, guaranteed 30 minutes. So 30 minute recipes, lots of leftovers, healthy food or home cooking. A lot of people say, well, it's just cheaper for me to eat out. So I thought store cupboard ingredients, things you can keep at home or things you can get at the shop down the corner. So that's my thing.
I love the title.
Eat Happy is so brilliant.
And we have a mutual friend in Laura Brown at InStyle. Did you see her this morning?
I didn't in the end. Oh, no, I know.
It's like a monsoon this morning.
I know. Ugh. We got soaked through. We didn't see each other. But hi, Laura.
Anyway, when I saw the title of your book, I was like, oh, this is so funny, because I feel like what Laura does is like dress happy and you're eat happy. And there's this real optimistic moment. I mean, if you take away like all the miserable moments too, but there's a real optimism that I feel a lot of my friends have tapped into. And I just love that you're moving forward this idea of eat happy, because you forget that sometimes in the food world. There's so much seriousness attached to things. There's so much pressure. There's, you know, people who have different food issues. And, you know, sometimes the joy disappears.
Exactly. And actually, when we've been eating out together this weekend, we all kept saying, these were our words, every time we decided on what was the final decision, something relaxed, something enjoyable, and simple to share. And that's what everybody wants. Yeah. And the restaurants that really stood out for us were the ones where the staff were happy, really knowledgeable, and felt really involved in the restaurant.
It's relaxed. There were loads of vegetables on the table.
All vegetables, all sharing.
Where did you go?
Oh, our favorite was it Miss Ada?
Miss Ada. We had such a good meal at Miss Ada. So my sister is like, she hawks around and like basically has like these maps for each city she goes to.
She's like our food concierge.
The lowdown on all the restaurants. She is encyclopedic and amazing. And so she'd been to Miss Ada before and said it was amazing. It's this brilliant chef who I think is his roots are kind of in Israel, but via somewhere. And
oh, it's a guy. That's probably why I haven't been there yet.
But he had...
I tend to go to the lady
the
chef restaurant.
The most amazing team of women working there as well. Just like so warm, so brilliant. And the food was just, it was knockout. Amazing, amazing, amazing vegetables.
But do you know what's funny what you say about the ladies? As when we walked in, he came over to the table and he said, the girls working here have all told me that you are these food writers and chefs from England. And then all the girls came over. So they were very excited. Yeah. And one of them had spent time in London, hadn't she? So yeah. we got some extra special love.
Yeah, they treated us so, so well.
But then
so
I went to have a drink at Elsa's yesterday in Brooklyn. Do you know that place? And we had
you two are showing me up here. You come to New York and go to all these places I haven't been to.
And then do you know Lois Wines, run by this amazing lady?
No, just keep naming things I've never heard of.
We're going to make a
wine,
name.
Yeah, she helped us out Lois yesterday Wines. At our brunch and got some incredible wine. And last night, actually, I went to a pretty, I guess, a New York stalwart in Mission Chinese, which was amazing. It's like, you haven't been there, have you?
No.
It's like crazy blue light. Like you cannot. It's like an Instagram food person's nightmare because you can't take a picture of any of your food. But, it was great. It was like kind of having dinner in a kind of like sort of like really vibey dive bar. It was amazing. I loved it. Loved it. But so we've eaten such good food here in New York, haven't we?
We're so lucky. Yeah. We've been so welcomed. We planned this trip quite last minute, didn't we? Like three weeks ago. Mm. And, also shout out to our co-collaborator and making this happen, Maxine Thompson from Polka Pants.
Yeah, did you two get the cherry pants?
Oh, yeah.
We love her limited edition cherry bomb pants.
Her trousers pants. I always feel like pants just doesn't sound right in my accent. But she is just amazing. She's like a powerhouse. All the women in the kitchens in London are wearing her pants and lots of women outside of kitchens as well. And we cooked together yesterday and we have been so welcomed, haven't we? I think there's like a, we've come for a weekend, we've kind of been sort of like, just going around having meetings, cooking brunch, cooking at Cherry Bomb. And, there's just like an openness here, which I think is just a bit more upfront than it is in other places. And people are so welcoming and so excited.
But
about
I felt that way in London.
Did you? Good.
But I do feel that what you put into the world is what you get back from the world sometimes. And I feel like you two put so much good stuff out into the world that I'm not surprised that even a place like New York, I'm
welcomes
always, you with a warm embrace.
Yeah, but I'm always, I'm going to the airport from this, Anna too. And on my way here, I was sort of going through my handbag of hell, which is just full of receipts and cards. And I have about 30 million cards from Cherry Bomb and people going, I'm going to connect you. I'm going to connect you. And that's what you could hear the whole time is people just go up and go, hey, how are you? My name is. And they chat for a while and then you get onto, what your loves are. And so many people now have, side hustles, side projects that they feel really passionate about. And if you run your own business, and we all do, is that you have to be, even if you feel really, really shy, you have to sell what you love, because then someone will instantly go, I know this person, I want to help you out. Mm. And then the love karma comes back when you can also do it yourselves. And I've got some mates in London called the Step Up Club and the Step Up School, and they offer career advice for women. And they call networking conversations with purpose. Mm. Which I really love the way they've rephrased that, because networking has sort of, if you let it, it can intimidate you as a phrase, especially when you're not feeling, you're feeling quite tired because maybe you've had your full-time job all day and then you want to go to an event, you feel shy to network. But then if you say conversations with purpose, it can really be great. And I feel like in New York, Anna and I, we're here, we're on our own trip, we planned this ourselves, and people seem to really respect that we've come out of this. And I mean, it's no hardship coming to New York, let's be frank, but people have been so helpful.
But it's also great as well, I think, to cook with other women. Like I write and cook at home on my own a lot, which, I do love. I love that space. I love that kind of flexibility. But it's just been so nice to come here and cook with Mel and to cook with Maxine and to be surrounded by all the women at, Cherry Bomb, and just, everyone's kind of like got the same message. And I think going back to what you said earlier about, the eat happy thing, and about also, the kind of conversations in food that can sometimes be serious and difficult, I guess, especially around the kind of, you know, eating disorder sort of situation. I feel like there are just so many amazing women kind of singing from the same kind of hymn sheet, as it were, on kind of like positivity around food. And I really feel like it's our responsibility, isn't it, to kind of like just shout about the joy of food. And it feels like that's what this trip for New York to New York for us has been about.
Well said, Anna.
Thanks, babe.
So what's up next for each of you?
I'm going home to my little boy, so that is very exciting because I've been away from him for 5 days. I've got kind of a bunch of stuff on the horizon. This book, The Modern Cook's Hero, is coming out in the US this year, so that's going to be amazing. I'm going to be back over here kind of doing some more supper clubs and hanging around.
Will you be here?
I'm not 100% sure yet. I'm not 100% sure yet, but... Okay.
Give me the heads up because
we'll
do some things.
Thank you. That would be amazing. I'm actually going to start work on another book, which is going to come out in the UK in a little while. I've got some really fun kind of like collaborations at restaurants and I don't kind of cook full time in a restaurant, but I kind of like, you know, I sort of move around and work with restaurants that I love in London. I'm doing one actually next Monday at Little Duck, which is this amazing kind of pickling, fermenting, brilliant little restaurant in Dalston. That kind of thing really, and just being around, being a mum as well. That's taking up quite a lot of time.
And then I'm going to be back over because remember we talked about Cook for Syria in New York.
Is it finally happening?
Well, I'm going to get you involved. Okay. I need your help, Carrie.
I tried to help last time.
Yeah.
We made a few connections, but we
started, didn't we? But actually what happened was it was so big in England that we couldn't get over here in time. But Cook for Syria is this incredible collab of lots of different food people. Anna's involved too. And it's about a year and a half old now, and it's raised over £500,000 for the Syria Fund for UNICEF. So there's a Cook for Syria cookbook. There's now a Bake for Syria book coming out in June.
Which looks incredible.
Looks insane.
So many good kind of middle, you know, Syrian-inspired cakes, just off the charts.
Yeah, and sweet and savoury, which is good too, because like, I'm not a massive sweet tooth person, but so there's great savoury in there too. And then Cook for Syria in New York, I think, will be end of this year. So there's been Cook for Syria. I went and did Cook for Syria Dubai. There's been Cook for Syria Sydney, Melbourne, Hong Kong, Paris, London.
So will you do like New York, LA?
100%. Okay. So we need your help.
End of the year,
I think. So maybe I can, when I know more, I'll check in with you and we can see the Cherry Bomb squad all over the US if they've got ideas or people that can get involved. That'd
Absolutely.
Be amazing.
And you know what? If anyone listening to the show wants to get involved, just email, you can email me.
Yeah.
You know, DM me.
That's
probably the easiest thing to do.
Perfect.
And check, I mean, the Cook for Syria have a great presence on Instagram as well. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of learn about their work through there. And it's such a, I guess, critical time in Syria, isn't it? It's kind of nice to feel like there's something a bit positive you can do, even if it is just buying a cookbook. It's a step in the right direction.
But if you want to help out or cook, or you have a connection to Syria through your family, or just because you have a big heart and you think it's the right thing to do, just DM me and we'll start to put a list together.
Yay. That was amazing. Thank you.
Thank you. Such a treat to see you both. This is like when I was in London and I had to leave everybody. I was practically in tears at the airport. You're awesome.
I'm feeling quite emotional about going home, actually. 4 days was just not enough.
No.
Not enough.
But it's good. You want to come back. It's like Chef Thomas Keller calls it the law of diminishing returns, that when you have too much of something, you just get tired of it. So it's good to just keep wanting more.
Yeah. Oh, we want more.
Yeah, we want more New York.
Also,
we'll be back.
I'm really excited because I haven't even opened my Cherry Bomb goodie bag yet.
Oh,
I'm going to do that
my goodness,
at the airport.
Have you
opened it?
Oh my God, it's wild. It was wild. Everything I was getting out, I was like, and there's more, another thing. It's up there. There's these food awards in the UK, the Observer Food Monthly Awards. And actually that's how we first met, I think, doing the cover. And we were on the cover of the Observer Food Monthly magazine, which is like an iconic magazine in the UK. They put five women all doing things around, you know, health, wellness.
That's right.
And I guess my sort of vegetarian vibe on the front. And yeah, they have this epic goodie bag and everyone goes to the awards, basically. Even if they can't really make it, they just go for 10 minutes to get the goodie bag. It's wild. And your one is the only one that has ever, ever equaled it. So, serious.
We need to get a wheeled case next time because it is
I think so. Yeah. But amazing.
Well, you two have given me a long to-do list of things. I need to cook through your books. I need to check out these restaurants in my own backyard that I haven't even been to yet that you have. I need your banana bread recipe. I need to collect your Jubilee recipe and your weekend recipe.
You need to send us your dates for August London.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have a lot to do now. So, but I love you both so much. I
hope you
know
that.
And I was thrilled that you could take part in Jubilee. We didn't even get to talk about Ruth Rogers. Did you hear her talk?
Oh my goodness. I'm such a big fan of hers. I went to a dinner with her recently and she was the most charming. You know, there was lots of Instagrammers at the dinner. I'll say this really quick. And you know how people are quite like, you know, these days when you go to events, people are quite, they keep themselves to themselves. And she had this incredible ability to kind of lean across the table and just start this conversation and kind of like hold the space and say, what do you think? What do you think? And it was, there was something like old school about it, but it was just, I just felt like I want to be Ruth Rogers. And every time I sit at a dinner table, I just think, what would Ruth Rogers do?
Oh, that's great.
There's quite a lot of what would Nigella do as well. So you had two of my heroes.
We do what would Alice do. I think that a lot.
Yeah.
No, she was remarkable. And just talking about how she runs the River Cafe London and that cookbook is beautiful.
You
have the good cookbook covers in the UK. Mm. Yours, Ruth's, yours.
She has those
beautiful pink
pages on the side, doesn't she?
Yeah, I know.
So she's the same publisher as me. So when her book came out, guess what I did? I called them up. I was like, can I have pink pages like Ruth? And they're like, nah, no. Only Ruth gets pink pages.
One day.
A big deal. She deserves those pink
30
pages,
years,
man.
30 years in business. So anyway, Anna, Melissa, you two are the bomb.
Thanks, Sherry.
Thanks so much for having us.
Bye.
Bye.
We'll be right back with our next interview after this word from our sponsors. Does this happen to you? You need a dozen eggs. You go to the supermarket. You head to the egg section, and you are so confused by what you find there, you freeze. You want nice eggs on hand because maybe you want a cheese and herb omelet for dinner, or you want a perfect poached egg to top your avocado toast with, and you know quality eggs make a big difference. And you're a decent person, so it's important that chickens have a good life. But as you stand there, you think to yourself, I have no idea what all these words on the egg cartons mean. So you shrug, pick one, and continue shopping. Stop right there. You are a busy lady. You don't need this bullshit in your life. You need bullshit-free eggs, which is where Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs come in. Their pasture-raised hens roam outside in 108 square feet of space per hen. Those cage-free hens, they never go outside. I tasted the difference once I tried Vital Farms eggs. Try for yourself. To get your coupon for Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs, head to vitalfarms.com/cherrybomb. So I mentioned last week that I took an ancestry DNA test to learn more about my ethnicity. I've always been curious about it and have wanted to know more about my family tree. Well, I got the results back and, ready? I'm 13% Scandinavian. Who knew? Maybe that explains why my family is so fascinated with Vikings. And I'm also 75% Irish, Scottish, and Welsh. The test specifically pinpointed the Irish provinces of Ulster and Munster. County Kerry, which I'm named for, happens to be in Munster, which is cool. For those of you who love cheese as much as I do, I can read your minds right now. You're wondering if Munster has anything to do with Munster cheese. Well, Munster cheese comes from a town in the Alsace region of France. But I did a little homework last night on Irish cheese, and the variety is mind-boggling. If you think Irish cheese begins and ends with cheddar, you need to plan a cheese tour of the country. As I mentioned during last week's show, I've never been to Ireland, so I'm putting Ireland at the top of my 2019 dream destination list. I'm more determined than ever to visit, see the beautiful landscape, meet all the cool women chefs, bakers, brewers, and yes, cheesemakers, and maybe even meet some family members. A few of you DM'd me after last week's show and offered to help me plan a tour. Lucy, Lily, thank you. Hopefully, I'll be taking you up on that next year. You, too, can savor your story in a whole new way with Ancestry DNA and discover the culture, cuisines, and traditions of your heritage. Ancestry DNA is on sale for just $59 until August 20th. Learn more at ancestry.com/cherry. Welcome back. Our next interview is with Ruby Grant and Jennifer Bogus of New Zealand's Hey La La Vanilla, the world's most awarded vanilla brand.
Hey Lala is a mission-based brand founded to help farmers in the Kingdom of Tonga after a cyclone ravaged the chain of islands. Hey Lala is producing beautiful products beloved by top chefs and bakers around the world. Be sure to listen until the end to hear about a special discount Hey Lala is offering the Bomb Squad. Enjoy our interview. Ruby Grant and Jennifer Bogus, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So excited. Are you both from New Zealand?
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting. And is that where the company is based?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Tell me about New Zealand. I'm dying to go to New Zealand one day.
It's this beautiful green country that has 20 million sheep and 4 million people.
And were you both born and raised there?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to fast forward. We'll start with you, Jennifer. How did you get into the food world and how did you wind up at Hey Lala?
I'm an accountant in my former life, but my father is a farmer and he started Hey Lala Vanilla in Tonga in the South Pacific near Fiji after a cyclone in 2002 to help a community get back on their feet. And at the time I wasn't really satisfied with my career and I wanted something that was a bit more purpose driven. So vanilla came into my life and that was in 2008. I left my day job. So I've been and leading Hey Lala Vanilla since then.
So your family's the Ross family.
Yes.
Got it. Yeah. Okay, now I know. But accounting.
Yes.
How did a farmer's daughter wind up becoming an accountant?
I was just good at it at school and then it just kind of went into university, we call it college, and then it was easy to get a job and then, you know, you just kind of follow your footsteps and then you never really question what you're doing or why you're doing it. And I was always searching for something that was a bit more meaningful, so... And then vanilla came into my life.
And Ruby, how about you? How did you wind up at Hey Lala?
I was a graphic designer, so I studied graphic design and advertising and then went to an agency, which I really enjoyed, but I did feel that we were working with a lot of middle marketing managers and they didn't really care about what they were doing or the products that they were pushing or the companies that they were working for. They just had a budget to spend. And if it wasn't spent, they wouldn't get it next year. So I felt that there was a bit of a disconnect between creating this great work, but nothing strong behind it.
So the same as Jennifer, essentially. You were craving something bigger, more meaningful.
Yes.
Yeah. Impactful. So how was the company founded?
So by my father, really. Mm-hmm. He after the cyclone in Tonga, after he'd done some rebuilding work, because he's a farmer, they asked the head of the community in Tonga asked him if he would do something that would provide employment for his community and family, extended family. And vanilla had grown there in the past, like 20 years before. So my father went on this worldwide discovery tour of vanilla and went to countries like Costa Rica and Tahiti and Madagascar and learned about how you grow vanilla and came back and applied that and set up our first plantation, and that was in 2002.
Wow. Yeah. So what does your dad, does he farm or did he farm?
He did. What? He was a dairy farmer and a crop grower in New Zealand and he had sold his farm and retired.
And he just went to Tonga to help out after the hurricane.
Yeah, he'd already been there on a dive trip. He was he's a great scuba diver, spear diver, and he'd fallen in love with the people in the place. It is a beautiful, it's over 300 islands. It's, you know, the picture postcard, white sandy beaches, blue ocean, and yeah.
So it was purely humanitarian. He just went there to help and then decided he was going to become a vanilla expert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he wasn't about... In New Zealand, a lot of people, when they hit retirement age, you know, they either play golf or hit the bowl club or, I don't know, something.
But wait, hit the what?
The bowling club.
Oh, the bowling club.
And he wasn't that type of person. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's still very active in the business today.
And how did they pull you in or how did you ask to be part of this?
So my dad is a farmer and, you know, he passed me these vanilla beans, which was about 20 pounds in 2005, the first crop. And he said, what are we going to do with these? I want to do something with them so that...
So there was no plan beyond...
No, not from his. And I was still an accountant then and we were going up there on holidays and enjoying, you know, the beautiful paradise of Tonga. And he said, you know, what are we going to do with these vanilla beans? And so I said, oh, well, I'll take them back to some chefs in New Zealand because my husband and I were quite into food and wining and dining. And so I took them to some chefs and they were like, this is the best vanilla we've ever seen. So that's how the seed sort of started. And then we did some research into vanilla and realised that, it goes through like 10 sets of hands before it gets to the chef. And we looked at what other vanilla companies were doing around the world, and we realised we could do something really unique and different.
Now, had you ever been in the food world, aside from your dad being a farmer, had you been in the food world at all?
No, not at all. No, I'd enjoyed great food and wine, but not involved in the food industry.
So you were building all these relationships from scratch?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And you'd baked with vanilla, obviously.
Yes. But I wasn't a big baker, I have to say.
No? You now?
I try when I have time, yeah. And obviously we get lots of inspiration from chefs that we visit and people sending us in, creations that they've made with our vanilla.
So. And now you have access to all these amazing chefs.
Yes.
And you got to bond with Natasha Pickowitz at Jubilee. We paired you and she made some really amazing, she made cookies and she made her bombolini, am I saying that right? With the vanilla cream inside. Did you actually get to eat any?
No, they all went before we could even.
The three of us. It's like the cobbler's children have no shoes,
There were some crumbs from the cookies left, which we managed to scrape up.
Oh, no, that's funny. Funny and sad. But all right, so your dad brings you these 20 pounds of vanilla beans, and the chefs tell you it's the best vanilla you've ever had. How did you put the pieces together to create this incredible company?
So after I visited those first chefs in New Zealand, and then that's when we started, and we realized that we wanted to create a whole range of vanilla products because the chefs just want the gourmet grade beans, the perfect looking ones. And there's, it's an agricultural crop, so you're going to get short ones and marked ones and split ones. And we knew we wanted to create a value added range of products, so not just sell the beans. So we did a whole lot of, we partnered with a research institute in New Zealand, and our first product we developed was the vanilla extract, and then from there the vanilla paste, and then we've done vanilla syrup, vanilla sugar, vanilla powder. And then it really just grew from there, and it's partnering with chefs that are passionate about ingredients and what they use and really care about them and where they come from and the story behind them. And we're really fortunate in New Zealand and Australia where there's, quite a network of chefs that we've tapped into. And then that's flowed into the home consumer and the home baker.
So we'll talk about the humanitarian aspect of this company in a minute, but you have some products that I'm not familiar with at all, because in America we have vanilla extract and that's pretty much it. But you have a vanilla paste. Tell us about the paste and how chefs use that.
So the vanilla paste is a great product because it's our vanilla extract with the seeds put back in. So one teaspoon is one.
It's vanilla extract with the seeds put back in. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you know what? Why don't we start at the beginning? What is vanilla extract exactly? Because we've all seen the beads. We've all seen the pods with the seeds inside. But how do you actually make vanilla extract?
So vanilla extract is the we make it the cold extraction way, which is the traditional way. So the vanilla beans are chopped up and then they sit in alcohol for over 3 months and they're circulated every day. And it draws out over 200 flavour compounds from a vanilla bean. So it's a really rounded vanilla extract that we produce, and we don't add any sugar or anything. It's just vanilla. And so then after we've made the vanilla extract, we've got all this leftover mush or spent vanilla bean, and then we wash out the seeds from the vanilla mush and spent vanilla, and then that's added into the vanilla extract, and a small percentage of sugar is what we add just to suspend the seeds. So the vanilla paste is actually our top selling product.
So unique.
And most awarded product. Like, we've won so many food awards for it, and it's really convenient and it's a lot more economical than using real vanilla beans.
So are they interchangeable? If I'm baking, can I use vanilla paste the same way I would use vanilla extract? Okay, great, great. And then the other product you have that we don't really have here, or if we do, I never noticed it, vanilla powder. So what's the vanilla powder?
So the vanilla powder is the whole bean ground up and dried.
Soaked in alcohol first?
No, just the whole bean.
And how are the flavors different?
The vanilla powder, you need to put it in something where it's got time for the flavor to release and infuse. So it's great in ice creams and panna cottas, and then people use it in smoothies and healthy baking like protein balls or whatever you call them here. Bliss balls, we call them at home. Yeah.
That's great.
And also for the vanilla powder, an unexpected angle is using it in savoury applications, whether it's in a rub or a seasoning, treating it more like a spice rather than a sweetener or a
baking product. Oh, how interesting, because it's not sweetened.
No, but it so, and the vanilla powder has a really earthy flavour and aroma because it's the whole bean, so it's the outside as well as the inside of the bean. So it's quite an earthy smooth.
That's so interesting because I think we have so many sweet associations with vanilla because just in America, everybody grew up making the Toll House, you know, chocolate chip cookies. So that's what we think of when we think of vanilla. Can you use the powder in beauty products? I'm like just thinking, you know, lip balm.
I think we do have one beauty product customer, don't we, Ruby?
So as a sugar coconut scrub, coconut oil, brown sugar and vanilla powder.
Yum. Okay. All right. So let's talk about the humanitarian aspect of this, of Hey Lala. So I'm guessing similar to chocolate and to coffee, they're sort of fair trade vanilla, which is what you're trying to do, take this beyond even fair trade vanilla. So talk to us about that part of the company.
So yes, we like to think of ourselves as beyond fair trade because we're dealing directly with the communities and the farmers. We partner with a lot of women in Tonga. Vanilla is a great livelihood for women because it's not physically demanding and it can fit in easily around, you know, their families, and it's a great...
Explain what you mean by that. It's not physically demanding in terms of how it's harvested.
So the vanilla flower is open once a year and it has to be hand pollinated within 4 hours of it opening to get a vanilla bean 9 months later. So that hand pollination process happens over about 6 weeks, and it's a very delicate, intricate exercise that women are great at because obviously their fingers are slimmer and they've got a much more attention to detail, I think. And, you know, they're...
Sorry, guys. For those of you listening.
And they can be chatting in the rows, and it's a real sort of gathering of women. And they can have their children with them if they're not at school, and it can be in school within school hours. And then at the end of that 9 months, when the vanilla bean is ready to be picked, they're picking them, and then they're curing them and drying them over 3 months. So they're putting them out into the sun every day, massaging them, just like babies, really, and then bringing them back in at night, wrapping them up, putting them out again the next day in the sun. So, and you know, throughout that process, it's not something that you need big muscles for or anything. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of farming crops, you need, you know, a more male orientated. So we've set up the Hey Lala Vanilla Foundation in 2013. That's really to benefit the communities that we are working directly with and to have an ongoing benefit, not just around vanilla, and a wider benefit. So we've done some projects, for example, with the local high school where we are based, and that includes we've set up like a cooking school department. We call it home economics. I'm not sure what it's called here.
Home ec.
Yeah. So
not
we put
as
in
popular as it used to be. Yeah. That's a thing here.
And then we've done playgrounds and schools. My father is actually part of a Rotary Club that's done projects up there for every year for the last 18 years, I think, coming up. So we've partnered with them as well. So that, you know, includes hospitals and schools and water projects and things. And then we, you know, we also employ women and provide them with opportunities. So they come to New Zealand to our factory and warehouse there, where they can see what happens after they've taken the tender love and care of over 12 months to produce the vanilla. And then they can take the, you know, what they've learnt back to their network in Tonga as well and share that with them. So we're really hands-on and working alongside communities and then, you know, seeing whatever support they need.
So Ruby, I read that you've expanded beyond Tonga now and are doing projects in places like Uganda.
Yes, so we are working with the co-op in Uganda, and Jennifer's father John's actually up there at the moment. So each, when we do look to source outside Tonga, while we're continuing to build our supply, we're looking at communities again that have a nice synergy and that we can partner with. And Jennifer, the co-op in Uganda that we work with,
is a co-op that was founded by an American guy actually to benefit women on the streets that have children. And it started as a sewing network, and then they realised pretty quickly that they needed to get sort of more income. So they, again, it's woman and vanilla, and, you know, they work with their babies on their back or wow. alongside them. So, you know, we're really grateful that we've found this group of people that share the same values and, you know, want to benefit these women in Uganda.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And I think really careful when we're looking to partner with other vanilla growers outside of Tonga, because there is there's a dark side to vanilla in Madagascar in particular, and things that are happening not only to shortcut the curing and drying process, but also in the ethical and the way that the vanilla's grown, and the labour that goes into it often isn't sustainable, and it's not ethical, and it's not producing a quality end product.
So how can you tell, I mean, if you can't find, obviously you want to buy a product that has a lot behind it, like Hey Lala, but what kind of certification is there out there when you're looking at products like vanilla? Is there something you should be looking for in terms of knowing where it's been sourced, how employees are treated, all of that? Or is it still just kind of very loose and unregulated?
I think it's emerging. It's a bit like coffee and cocoa, mm-hmm. How they've sort of got, you know, various certifications and things, but it hasn't really happened in the vanilla industry yet. I mean, there is obviously fair trade, but we've chosen not to pursue that fair trade certification because we don't feel that it benefits the communities that we work with directly, and the certification costs are quite high, and we would rather put that money directly into the community that we work with. So we're working on setting up our own sort of certification system, if you like. So, you know, we want to be completely transparent so people can see exactly what the whole supply chain looks like. Mm.
So tell me about your distribution. Where we have listeners all over the world. Where can people find your product?
Well, in the US, it's on Amazon, and then it's in a few specialty stores like Dean DeLuca, Bristol Farms out on the West Coast, a number of other sort of smaller independent stores. And then we obviously have a great network of chefs that are using the product.
Can you name drop anybody? We talked about Natasha.
Go Ruby.
Natasha's fabulous. So in New York City, 11 Madison Park, the pastry team there are fabulous. Gramercy Tavern, Loring Place.
The Grill, The Pool, Stephanie Parida, Ovenly.
Brooklyn Bakery. So again, we know we never want to be in every restaurant in the country, but partnering with chefs who appreciate the story and the care that's gone into their ingredients when they're baking or making desserts.
But you've got a lot of major people using your product. Those
yeah,
are,
it's quite
those,
exciting.
Those are ringing endorsements.
Yeah.
And how about in other countries? Have you expanded into other countries? I'm guessing you're in New Zealand.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm. Australia.
And then Australia. Mm-hmm. And then we send to Singapore, Hong Kong, Japan, Denmark, and Brazil. And the UK actually as well, just to a donut chain called Crosstown Donuts.
Oh, fun. So Ruby, are you the one who works with the chefs? Or
yes.
Everybody does? Okay.
It's a bit of a collaborative effort, and we are still a really small team, so everyone pitches in, but I am lucky that I get to be on the receiving ends of pastries and desserts quite often.
What's the feedback you get from the chefs and the pastry chefs about the product?
That they're really thankful and respectful that of what we're doing, and that they can share those stories with their customers, and again bringing to light some of the not so great things that are happening in vanilla. I know a lot of chefs would like to come to Tonga now to hand pollinate their own flower. So we get asked that, or offered spare sets of hands in pollination season for that to happen. And we have in the past taken a couple of chefs up to Tonga, which is fantastic for them to see all the love and care that goes into the vanilla before it actually gets to them.
Well, it's just incredible how much we don't know about we keep going back to the coffee and the chocolate and vanilla, how far removed we are from the process physically and geographically and all of that. And it's really just such a complicated process to get from these plants and these flowers to the end product that we really just take for granted, you know, these are products that everybody has in their, pretty much everybody has in their homes or access to. and you don't really think about how they begin as these incredible plants and flowers in these very far, you know, at least from New York, pretty far away.
Yeah. It's like worlds apart, really.
Absolutely.
I was in Tonga a couple of weeks ago, and then obviously now we're in New York, and I sort of looked around the other day and I'm like, wow, feels like you're on another planet almost. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you both go to Tonga much?
Yeah, I go up at least 4 times a year, mm-hmm. and Ruby's been up quite a few times. Mm-hmm. Mm. We try and make sure that members, like I mentioned before, of the team in Tonga come to New Zealand, and then the members of the New Zealand team go to Tonga so that we can both understand what each side of the team are up to.
Mm. And it's great when we are here to get photos with chefs or retailers that we visit and take it back to Tonga and show our amazing team of women farmers where their love and tender care has got this amazing product to the other side of the world. And it's very exciting for them to see that it is on a menu in the number one restaurant in the world or in an amazing bakery or patisserie.
I can imagine. And then back to the two of you, you know, you got into this because you wanted to do something different and meaningful. How do you feel now?
I think sometimes you're just so sort of busy doing what you're doing and you know, I think it hits you, for example, when we went into the kitchen at the Nomad Hotel and we were showing them the vanilla and they were also positive and responsive and you're thinking, wow, this is, you know, something that started over 10 years ago and here we are. So, but lots to do yet. So it's not like we're sitting on our laurels.
Mm. And how about you, Ruby?
So I'm 8 years into the Heilala world now, and I think it's so easy to be able to sell and market a product when you can be so passionate about it and it has the backstory. It's all well and good having a great product, but so many great products out there don't have the story to back it up. So having both parts makes it a really easy job most of the time.
Well, I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing because being in the food world, it's so nice that there's this whole growing movement of people and brands who just really want to do the right thing by just everybody, by the people helping make and grow the product. And it's just really nice. And we talk a lot about, you probably heard this a little bit on Saturday, but also on the show and in the magazine, we talk a lot about where you can spend your money. And, you know, you do have a choice. You know, you could buy something conventional or you can do your homework and buy something that is meaningfully sourced and is giving back to the people who are, you know, helping make that product a reality. So it's really wonderful that you're doing what you're doing. What's next for Heilala?
Just building really more sort of networks with chefs in the US and, yeah, continuing.
And building our supply chain in Tongan too, because it is a 3-year wait until the yield comes on. So we're always looking ahead and thinking about the markets that will and the customers that we're going to be supplying in 3 years' time.
All right, so I'm going to talk about the two of you at home baking. Which Heilala product do you reach for the most and what do you make? Putting you on the spot.
I would use the vanilla paste the most and I use it and just about everything from even if I'm just whipping cream or stirring it through yogurt, particularly in the summer months more. And at home we have a dessert called pavlova, which I understand you also have here.
I've never made a pavlova, Nigella's, but I want to make one.
Nigella's latest book, mm-hmm. actually. And that is, we have pavlova at Christmas time because it's summer. So pavlova, meringues.
You just inspired me. I'm going to use my Heilala and make a pavlova because I was making something. I had all these egg whites and it was a pasta dish. And I was like, what am I going to do with all these egg whites? And I was like, I'm going to learn how to make a pavlova.
And so you get to see the little, you know, black flecks through, mm-hmm. which is really nice.
I'm going to do it and take a picture for you. How about you, Ruby?
Well, we actually have a brand new product, which is just about to be launched, but I've been playing with it in the background for the last 6 months. It's called Breakfast Vanilla, which is quite unique and there's nothing like it available. So it's similar flavour profile to our vanilla extract, but we create it using glycerin. So there's no alcohol in it whatsoever. And I do have a bit of a sweet tooth, so I like to try and start the day or breakfast time being a little bit more healthy. And so adding a teaspoon of breakfast vanilla to whether it be my oatmeal or granola or a smoothie or juice or coffee, it gives you a pure vanilla flavour without any sugar or additives. So it makes a great morning addition and makes you feel like you're having a bit of a sweet treat without any of the sugar that comes with it.
Breakfast vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you heard it here first. When will that be available?
In the next 8 weeks, it'll be launching.
Okay, very excited. And speaking of sweet treats, you have a sweet treat for the listeners of Radio Cherry Bomb, right?
We do, a discount code for Amazon.
Ready, everybody, get your pens. Write this down.
So it actually was, we set it up for everyone that came to Cherry Bomb as well. So it's HVCBJ, so Hey Lala Vanilla, Cherry Bomb Jubilee, and then NYC, so New York City. So HVCBJ, NYC.
Okay, we're going to put that on our social media so everybody knows about that. But that's very generous of you. What is the...
So it's a 20% discount off the whole range of Hey Lala products on Amazon.
Oh my gosh, fantastic. Well, I know there are a lot of bakers out there because you all DM me and you tell me that you listen to the show while you're baking or working in the restaurants at night baking. So, hey, if you can, try Hey Lala. They're doing the right thing and the money is going to the right place and it's helping a lot of women. So thank you so much for being on the show. I know you have a busy schedule while you're here in New York, but we loved working with you for Jubilee. I hope you had a lot of fun with Natasha Pickowitz.
We did.
At the conference and met a lot of nice people. But it's been nice getting to know you and the brand.
Thanks a lot, Kerry.
Thanks, Kerry.
Thanks for stopping by. That's it for today's show. Thank you to the Hey Lala Vanilla team. That discount code, if you want to buy some Hey Lala on Amazon, is HVCBJNYC. That stands for Hey Lala Vanilla Cherry Bomb Jubilee NYC, and it's good through August 31st. And thank you to our British Bomb Squad. Be sure to check out their gorgeous new cookbooks, Melissa Hemsley's Eat Happy and Anna Jones' The Modern Cook's Year. Thank you to our sponsors, Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Visit cordonbleu.edu and see what awaits you. Vital Farms pasture-raised eggs. To get your coupon, head to vitalfarms.com/cherrybomb. And Ancestry. Ancestry DNA is on sale for just $59 until August 20th. Learn more at ancestry.com/cherry. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and Heritage Radio Network. Our theme song is by the band Tra La La, and our show was engineered by the one and only DJ Dave Tatasciore. You can subscribe to our show wherever you listen to podcasts, and you can subscribe to Cherry Bomb Magazine at cherrybomb.com. Or you can buy a copy at one of our favorite shops, like the Miracle Plum Market in Santa Rosa, California. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Radio Cherry Bomb is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.